Hi there. Welcome to Mushroom Hour. Today on Mushroom Hour, we are graced by the presence of artist, mycophile, and bioneer Irene Antones. Irene is a Prague-based Russian-Ukrainian artist and musician who works in the genre of bio-art and botanical mycological illustration with a focus on fungi and microorganisms. She holds two master's degrees in future design and in fine art. Irene draws inspiration from her microscopic research of fungi as well as mushroom hunting, ethnomycology, ethnobotany, old scientific illustration books, as well as from her family's history of mushroom obsession. She uses a microscope to explore the invisible world of tiny organisms that we typically overlook. She believes it's highly important to emphasize the spirit or soul in every living being, no matter its scale or size. In her artwork, Irene plays with a combination of various scales to show the beauty and importance of tiny microscopic creatures to the world. She is constantly engaged in mushroom-related projects all around the world. She has been a guest speaker at mycological events like the Hawaii Mushroom Conference and has her artwork displayed in exhibitions both in Prague and internationally. Irene, thank you so much for joining us on the Mushroom Hour.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited. I've worn your artwork on my t-shirts and we followed it for so long on social media. So I always love to meet the artist behind these magnificent creations. And I think you have a really interesting story that I didn't know about when it comes to microscopy and mycology and you do music. So I'm excited to learn about it all. But kick us off with some of that origin story. Tell us some of that family history, maybe some of your vocational experience that led you to working with nature and with mushrooms and kind of put you on the path that you're on.
So, yes, I did grow up in a very like a mycophilic culture, and my family, all of my family, like all the persons there are completely in love with mushrooms. Like it's obsession, like you cannot cancel a mushroom hunting trip. A lot of them, like, especially in the autumn. And I grew up like in this atmosphere of loving nature, loving fungi. And my parents would take me to all these trips and I was just like learning to walk. I would not even like talk. I didn't know how to talk, but I already knew a lot of mushrooms and I knew how to, you know, differ one from another. I knew which ones are edible. Like all this was from my early age. And I would say like my first memories about myself are actually from like mushroom hunting with my parents. I can remember like finding the mushrooms, competing with them. It was this kind of game that kept us all together and this feeling of competition and joking on each other. Like, hey, I found it first. Like you're the loser. And that's how it was happening. And then parallel to this, I'm incredibly grateful like to my family for, you know, keeping me surrounded by nature and by art and by music. It was all like naturally flowing together since I was very young. And I remember like in the evenings, we could listen to some classic music with my father. He was into music a lot, like into piano. And then I could see my mother's paintings because she loved painting. Like they never did it like a profession, made it into a profession, but it was there and I could like see that how beautiful it is and learn. And I was just drawing endlessly for like hours and hours and hours. All the princesses, horses, and all this fairy tale stuff. Like I still have tons of papers just with all these elements. I just couldn't stop. And that's how it was starting, I guess. Yeah, that's my childhood. I would only add that I think it was very like conservative culture also. I will explain that because, for example, I was always told that like Amanita muscaria is something that you cannot even touch, like you cannot even come closer, like stay away, stay away. And I'm not even talking about like a psychedelic mushrooms. It's a taboo. And so all these things were like later, maybe I will mention it later, but like when I came here in Europe, like it was a huge mess in my head, because for me it was like, no, you cannot. And then I meet so many people, you know, they tell me stories how psilocybin mushrooms, for example, changed their life, or Amanita microdosing helped them, and I'm like, what? No, but you will die. So it was like a big change later for me.
Well, that's an interesting context, that even in such a mycophilic culture, that there was a taboo around anything that might change your consciousness, whether that be Amanita or psilocybin. Now, where did you grow up then? Was that in Russia, Ukraine area, and then you moved to Prague?
No, so my father was like from Ukraine, his roots, but his parents, they were in Lithuania, and then they moved to Nizhny Novgorod, which is quite close to Moscow. It's like 4 hours. For us, it's like a close. So it's like more or less central, no? And my mother was always there, like in Nizhny Novgorod. So that's why I'm saying I'm half.
Yeah, very interesting background. And it's rare that you get a story like that where you can just see, oh, that makes sense. That's how you became what you are today, is you had classical music playing, you had an artist, you were spending time in nature, da-da-da, and here you are doing all of those things in your day-to-day life. But, you know, I was really curious, too, about your master's degrees. Fine art, I understand, but what is future design? What is that? What did that master's entail? I saw that, and I was like, that's cool. I wish I had studied that.
Yeah, I think it was one of the best choices in my life. But I would like to maybe a little bit explain what was before, so that make you understand how I came to future design. Like, I have background in industrial design, actually. Like, my bachelor's were in industrial design back in Russia. And it was like this compromise between me and my family, kind of, and also between the fear of, you know, not making it if I just do art or music. It was like, okay, this is design, so maybe it's not that awful as if I would just go for art studies or music right. studies. So let's keep it like this in the middle. And also industrial design sounded more like connected to engineering and stuff. So the school was very much into drawing, and we would spend like at least, I think, 10 hours a week just drawing classical stuff, like all these gods, Greek gods and stuff. Just, yeah, it was
that
like
cool.
Obligatory. Yeah. And I really loved that part. And then we didn't really have much equipment to learn, you know, the real programs, how to work with 3D stuff. But we were more drawing. So like
Perfect.
It was always there in my life, but I felt at the end that I need, you know, some transition. I need something else. Like it's not exactly what I wanted to do. And I also started traveling a lot at that time. I went for different volunteer projects outside of Russia. One of them was in Italy in this art museum. It's like influenced me a lot. Like I saw this freedom, this artistic expression, you know, how it can be really, like, you know, not so classical, not so restricted, so open. It was also psychedelic in many ways. There is this open air museum in the south of Italy. It was, and then I traveled to India. I was performing there, and like all this time I was thinking about my future, and I like realized I need some change. So I started applying for different master degrees, and I spent like a year or more, and then I found this future design, and I was like, okay, that sounds very, very attractive to me. And it was indeed, like, when I actually got accepted and I arrived here and started studying, it was very flexible, very open-minded. It was very much focused on the research, on curiosity, experimentation, and we were pushed to, you know, to just go outside and do something and experiment, and, you know, just be curious about what's going on, and be adaptive to this modern world, which is changing like every second. So be ahead of it. It all at first was very scary, because I'm not used to this. Coming from Russia, we always had task. We had a classical system. It has to be done like this. And here, you know, come with your crazy ideas and do whatever you want. It was quite hard at the beginning, but it was the thing that pushed me like towards, you know, just discovering more things around me and myself as well, like, you know, curiosity towards what do I like really. And we had this speculative design project that changed my life almost, because it made me, you know, they told us, you know, you just go outside and look around you and come up with speculative design idea, like about future, something, you know, that is not possible now, but maybe would be possible in the future.
Right.
And I remember that day when I went outside and I like started just looking at things with a lot of attention. And I remember looking around and noticing so many mosses, so many little lichens. And I was like, oh my God, I knew they were there. And of course we would look at them in the forest back home, but I never really like thought about their importance or about, you know, that they are as equal as I am and all these things. And that's how it all started. And it made me, you know, curious to look at them closer. So I got my first magnifying glass, and then like it all started from there, like from this change.
Well, there's so much in that story, but it's funny. You talked about a phrase that I've heard recently that I find to be true sometimes is the tyranny of structurelessness. How sometimes thrown into an environment without any structure can be overwhelming, and you don't know what to do until you can kind of make your own structure and find your own way. But I love that idea of just go out, use your imagination, try to maybe get inspiration from nature, do some biomimicry, invent what the future is going to look like. And maybe instead of thinking something entirely new, look at what organisms around us are already doing, and what we can learn from that. So it sounds like that was your venture then into microscopy. And I was super excited to talk about this because, like I said, I knew you're this amazing artist, but I didn't know you were doing, you know, proper microscopy and really a scientist in your own right. So talk about that then. Talk about the process of learning microscopy, and as someone who was already doing arts and music, kind of how that integrated into your life and maybe how that changed your art and music. But yeah, talk about getting into microscopy and what that process was like for you.
Yeah, so we started from that speculative design class at Future Design, right? As I said, so I got this little magnifying glass, which you can like separate in two parts, and they both had different magnification, and I could take it to the forest. And of course, also another thing was that I was missing my family so much. So this, you know, I would like just take myself to nature, and that would make me feel closer to them. So it was these two, you know, emotional and also, you know, curious scientific exploration parts. And I would go to the forest, look at things. Then I started taking photos. I started collecting more and more photos, and also Googling like professional microscopic photos and being amazed. And it was just all accumulating a lot. I came up with this project of, it's a little bit crazy, but it was like a moss cryo capsule.
Okay, explain what that is to
so
us.
It was...
I don't have an image in my head.
Yeah, it was this capsule where a person would be buried and frozen based on like qualities of moss. And I imagine that mosses would come back like to their initial form, because in the very, very beginning, they were huge, like a forest, right? So, and the same for mushrooms, like things were different size. So I imagine that we would under the climate change, we would like, the plants would adapt again, and that would grow really big. And I imagine that maybe we could, you know, create these moss capsules that would keep a person in the same condition when they are dead, till scientists can, you know, make them alive again.
Right.
Because mosses, I started reading a lot, and I read several books about mosses, and like they had these special properties of keeping, you know, being able to keep things safe, because they hold like temperature, something like this. So
that is
anyway,
fascinating.
It's a long story. I'm not going to go so much into
well,
it.
Well, that one thing gives us so much insight to who you are as a creative person, and why that task of like, go out into the world, find some future technology. Wow, perfect. Irene is going to invent new moss cryo suits for us. That is so cool.
was and that was like the first step towards, just discovering things on this microscopic level. And then I had also almost at the same time I organized my first solo exhibition here, because I couldn't keep my hands free. I wanted to draw all the time these microscopic worlds. So I had this exhibition where most of the works were inspired already by this magnifying glass research. You could also find there mushrooms, slime molds, like all these little organisms I was falling in love with again. It was like, of course I knew mushrooms, of course I knew art, but it was on the whole new level, all this happening. So that's how it started. And then, like, when I applied actually for fine art, when I admitted that, I accepted myself and said, okay, let's be honest, like, you are more than anything an artist, and you may be forcing yourself all life to do like serious things, but you will, miss the happiest thing in your life. Just admit it and be brave, and go out there and try to make it as an artist. So yeah, and I applied for fine art, and there I focused completely on mushrooms. All my research was about mushrooms, with microscopes. I went for this art residency in Slovenia, where I was collecting mushroom stories from people.
Ethnomycology.
I was like interview. Yeah, it was so cool. Like, I received so many stories from different parts of the world. And then parallel to this, they got me this amazing microscope that I've never touched in my life. It was just so huge, and the level of magnification that I couldn't even imagine. And I could take these amazing photos, and I used this photo material to create artworks inspired by these mushroom stories. So that was one project, and then the other projects, and many, many projects that I, like, based on these microscopic photos, or sometimes I do like several photos, and I play with them in Photoshop and create my kind of mixed picture that I use as a reference for the background of my works, like.
I was just seeing that. I was because we always talk about like these backgrounds, like is this outer space or way, which kind of makes sense, like that law of correspondence, right? Like yeah, it's outer space, but it's also the microorganism. But that's amazing. So that's where these psychedelic kind of interstellar looking backgrounds come from, is your work in microscopy. And just in that learning process for yourself, what was it like to learn that microscopic work? Is it something you took to immediately? And then if you have any tips for anyone who wants to get into microscopy, they might not have that giant microscope that you got from going to
Yeah.
Slovenia, but any tips for anyone who wants to get more into microscopy?
When I think about it, I just think that the best is just to start small. And really, for me, was that first magnifying glass was enough, really, to change my whole life. So I would say, don't wait for getting a good microscope, because you may never get it, because it's just extremely expensive. Like, I have my microscope, but it's also not that good, and not it's basic, it's nice, but it's enough to base your project on it, or to experiment with fungi. Sometimes you have to just I guess, how to say, push yourself. I don't know, like
Yeah.
I said, okay, maybe let's check how mushrooms look in different states under the microscope. So I dried some of them. Some of them I put in the water. Some of them I do whatever. And then I look how they all change. And it's completely different picture. It's completely different life happening under the microscope. And one more thing before I forgot, I wanted to mention that really looking at these microscopic worlds teaches us a lot about, being really humble and about who we are, because really we are just so focused on our scale and on the, everything has to be our size, or like we only perceive things that we see, but really there's so many things happening around that we have no idea. and we think that we are the kings. So these thoughts are like constantly in my head when I'm, you know, traveling through these microscopic worlds. It's just, they teach so much about, you know, respect for other kinds of life and scales.
Absolutely. What an important lesson for us all to remember. I was just reading recently about, yeah, our visual bias as humans and so much of the world we interact with. We kind of have a bias on what you can see, whereas other organisms don't care at all about what's visually available. And there are smells, biochemical receptors, and they might have a much richer experience of the world than we do. So we should probably be more humble and be listening. And, you know, as part of this whole conversation of appreciating the microscopic, I was really struck by your focus on spirit and soul, concepts that I don't think we, you know, I don't think we bring to the microscopic level. We don't think of small bacteria or protists or, you know, small hyphal fragments as some part of spirit or soul. So how does that concept flow with your understanding of the microscopic world? How does that enter the scene? I guess I'm asking for like Irene's worldview, but yeah, how like spirit and the microscopic come together for you?
I actually like think that for me, there is no contradiction.
Yeah.
Like for me, they actually add onto each other, and one like does not exist without another, because, you know, for me, when I get into these scientific books, of course, I do not consider myself any kind of cool scientist, but at least I'm trying with my artistic mind to look into the books and fake that I am cool scientist. But really, when you read about this, for me, it's really another proof that there is something bigger than us, and that there is intelligence, that there is God or universe or how you want to call it. So for me, they like help one another to exist. So I don't see the contradiction. Yeah, I guess I just feel that there is a lot of consciousness around us. And also when you read all this, you know, like for example, if you read Madeleine Sheldrake, he's talking a lot about intelligence of other living beings, yeah,
right.
other kind of intelligence. So again, we are so restricted in our vision that it's really hard for us to realize that, you know, maybe our consciousness, our intelligence is just one kind of consciousness and intelligence, and there are many, many more other, you know, organisms that think differently, live differently, and we should, you know, learn from those because they are older than us, much older. Yeah. And they've been here for a while, and we are like in a few seconds came here with all the equipment.
We've got it all figured out. Well, mycology is such an exciting field, I think, because people like yourself who are artistic and creative, but are interacting with science out of pure curiosity. And it's this unique ground where I think these two things are being blended. Like you said, there is no contradiction. The artistic understanding of things and that ability to take in so much different unrelated information and turn it into something kind of blends well with, hey, Ed, well, then I need science to tell me what each little part is and kind of help me put this greater picture together. And when you said that about soul and spirit on the microscopic level, you know, I was thinking, yeah, does every small microorganism have a soul or a spirit in our kind of modern cosmology? And of course, I'm informed by like a very Western European kind of Judeo-Christian mythology in my head, the way I see the world a lot of times. Mm-hmm. But you think like, does every single one of those organisms have a spirit? Can we really put ourselves above them on some kind of hierarchy? Is that very spiritual to say that we are better because we are the bigger spirit? Or is this collection of microorganisms, these communities of microorganisms that are invisible, are they maybe like a force that could be described as spirit in ancient mm-hmm. mythologies and iconographies? It's like, oh, a spirit is animating this thing, when really it's like a bunch of colonies of microorganisms making something happen.
Like a one system working as one brain and one soul, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. And then they are there in their microscopic world, like going around and asking each other, "Do you think these huge things over there, they have any spirit or soul?" Not sure.
Yeah, do those giant pigs have a soul? That's hilarious. That's hilarious. Well, I think that's an amazing concept. And so I guess, you told us then about how your works come together, but as much as you can, tell us where these themes show up, because your work does strike me as kind of psychedelically inspired in some ways. In other ways, like I said, it's almost outer space or, but yeah, how do these concepts of the microscopic thinking about soul and spirit and not just doing an anthropocentric kind of superiority view, how do you think it shows up in your work? Is it something conscious? Does it just happen?
Honestly, like most of them just come to me. I cannot do anything about it. I don't really like force. It just comes to my head, and sometimes I just walk with them together for days, and I'm like, okay, I cannot hold you anymore. We need to get you out on the canvas. And some of them are more like thought out, like these huge ones, being on the flow project. Like I tried to plan them. Of course, I go with the flow later, but I had like a kind of building plan. Like I started from more abstract parts of microscopic background. Then I brought some realistic parts and some surreal parts. And I'm just trying to, to combine many scales in one artwork to, really get the person into this, to help them immerse themselves into this microscopic and macroscopic world, to just feel that, there are so many scales. You are just a part of them. Look how they influence you, or maybe you influence them. Just be the part of that flow and see what happens. Be curious. These mushrooms, they are all about curiosity, all about flow, all about these open-ended things. And you never know where they come up. Is this feeling of surprise? And for the psychedelic part, actually, it's very funny, but I've been asked many times, like especially at my exhibitions, like most of the time the first question is like,
So, are you on mushrooms right now?
so where is it coming from? And apparently, like psychedelic mushrooms are for me is completely different story, and I have a lot of pictures in my head, in my like sober head. And then psychedelic mushrooms for me are more like a therapy or like something that I'm, just cleaning myself and, just resolving some issues that been in my life. But it's more on like a soul level or more like a psycho level, but not like it's not connected that much to art. It's more philosophical part of it. So like the art, the visionary part of it, it's coming like just from my imagination, and that's how I work.
Just blessed with an abundant imagination. And when you were talking about that,
Kind
we think of like scales as different worlds. So I love that your work tries to remind us that this microscopic is happening in your world right now. You're not separate because you're big and can't see it. It's all
Yeah.
going on in parallel. And we can all have the image in our head of, I know what's going on microscopically, on my skin, or like try to blend those two worlds.
Yeah,
What a
exactly.
What an interesting concept. And I love that. I had a question in here. I love when I think artists are like almost channeling. Do you feel that sometimes that maybe it's the microorganisms, maybe it's something else that are telling Irene, hey, put this image out there. Come on, I'm literally like manipulating your brain. Let's go.
I can definitely feel about it that way. Like I once said that I'm feeling like a fungi ambassador in a way. They just, tell me, okay, you have to just, tell this information to the world. And especially that I find myself in this, I do find myself in mycophilic cultures, but at the same time, they're quite backwards. Like if we compare to like a USA or like more open-minded societies. And these cultures here, like Russia and Europe, parts of Europe, is very much, traditional. How do you say, conservative? So like a lot of things are a taboo here. So I feel even more responsibility to, to be this channel, as you say. It's like my duty to try and show these thoughts and ideas, and then of course some people will feel something, some not, like.
Well, and when we think about Russian literature in Eastern Europe, I mean, there have been some of the great intellects and philosophers of kind of modern Western European thought, if you will, have come from that area. But do you think, and when you say conservative, obviously that may play into conversations like here in America, we're playing with ideas of gender and fungi are informing that and informing how we look at, relationships with each other. And then, but even more broadly, just these ideas of thinking of, do these things have a spirit? Now that, to me, I could see that culture kind of playing with that idea, but I guess the question is, are all of these ideas you're thinking of, or you're blending these worlds, are these finding like kindred spirits in your colleagues and people around you? Do people want to play with these ideas? Do you think it's something that's tough to even talk about in that culture? Yeah, just that idea of when you bring up that conservative culture, how does it affect some of these kind of big biophilosophical ideas you're playing with?
I find a lot of support, of course, in like a mushroom communities
Right.
in, but people are coming from a lot of people who support me are actually in USA, but also like a Latin America. Some are from Europe, but it's a little bit like, I don't know, I think we really need, like, one of my future plans and like goals to wake the Europe up, because we need that more of these communities and, just fellow mushroom lovers, just some events. Like, we don't really have that
Yeah.
here in Prague. They do have like a mycological society where I was like exhibiting my work. Also, I did some stuff for them, but I felt like it's really hard to knock into the people's, soul or heart. Like, it's a little bit closed culture or something like this. I'm still figuring it out. So I do appreciate so that there is so much support coming from people from all around the globe, because it makes me going, helps me, not to be stuck. And of course, because mushrooms are very narrow field and microorganisms, like, it's really a small little field that not
Yeah.
everyone is like into. And most of the people are like, yeah, it exists, but why are you so, crazy about it? Are you okay? And I'm like, no, but you don't know, the mushrooms are this and the mushrooms are that, and I'm trying really. And the best reward is to see when people are coming back to me, after some time. They're like following me on Instagram or Facebook, and they're like, hey, hello, so I just saw this mushroom, and it's the first time in their lives. And I think this is the best thing, if you can do that, because who were already into nature, they most likely will continue this. But the people who never actually were into this, that's the best thing. Like, that's the most satisfaction I get. Like, when someone just is writing to me, hey, these are the mushrooms that you are drawing. They're like, yes, this is this mushroom, and you can do this with that, and this is that, and here's the recipe, you can do that.
Yeah, when you get that message, you sit back with your fingers steepled. You say, yes, we've converted another one. We've got another one on to the
Into the
mushroom
sect.
world. Yeah, into the, exactly, into our sect here. Well, and I was just curious about that because so much of where I think mushrooms and now microorganisms, a lot of where mushrooms and microorganisms are making really big changes in how we see the world is how we relate it to our human experience. Like how understanding how these organisms work and really, yeah, but the mushrooms do this and this, like you're saying, they do all these things and how that then tells us about who we are. 'Cause humans were always looking for some kind of analog to explain how we should be, how our society should be from
Where we
earliest.
start, where we end.
Exactly. The earliest times we looked at nature and we looked at, well, the human society is like a body, or it's like the jungle with the lions and the. So now if we enter in fungi and microorganisms, how does that change human narratives? And I'm very biased. I'm like, I think that's happening in the US. Not really. They're probably still, most people see it as totally weird. But
Weird.
I just wondered if in Europe, like with already cultures that are so much more comfortable, it seems like in continental Europe with mushrooms and eating mushrooms, if they were more ready to like, yeah, well, of course, this totally changes how we're going to structure society now because of mycelium. But it sounds like that's still a process that's happening, and artists are probably going to lead that.
Yeah, I mean, young people are bringing ideas, bringing it, slowly but surely. But yeah, it's the older generation that is still like hesitating and not very like acceptive of these things. And it's understandable. They grew up in completely different society and in completely different culture and traditions. So I do understand that. So it will take some time, but here and there you can hear more about these innovative mycelium technologies or some crazy ideas again, like here even this future design, yeah, where I studied. It's a Prague City University. It's very, very open-minded to anything, to all these strange, weird ideas.
And I guess that's good news, because if the world were the way it is and everyone already knew about mushrooms and all the implications, it'd be like, wow, where do we go from here? But not everyone knows yet. There's still so much good
No.
word to preach and get everyone turned on to mushrooms, and then maybe we can kind of change the dominant paradigm, change some of the dynamics here. That's really interesting. And I guess that plays right into then, what has the reception been for your artwork? And maybe tell us about some exhibitions that are ongoing for you. Or actually, let's say this. Well, and that plays into then the reception of your artwork. Maybe tell us about like the first exhibition you had and what that meant to you, the exhibition of the kind of this bio artwork, and then how people seem to be receiving your work.
It's a very nice memory. Like I didn't expect that, there will be a response to this kind of work, but it was. I think like so. One of the things that I'm also trying to say with my work is bringing you back to your roots and to nature, because one of the important things to understand in our time that as we're killing nature, we are killing ourselves because we come from there. And I think like at least I'm that's what I'm trying to say also behind the paintings. So I try to when I have exhibition, and at this first exhibition I remember that I did like these private tours where I would take people and just explain what's behind the picture, because it's not enough to just show the pretty mushrooms. It's good to also communicate, and when you communicate, especially one-on-one, it may change things really for the better.
Powerful first exhibition, and I'm glad you got some positive reception to kind of keep you going and get that boost.
Yeah, it helped me to continue. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and then today, where are or do you have any active exhibitions? Where can people see your work?
Well, right now, no, because I had a big move. I had my studio outside of home, and we just like finished rearranging everything here, and I just finished like constructing my studio. Now it
Yeah.
looks perfect, and I'm really excited to work more. Also, I had this graduation from fine arts, so I had this huge exhibition that with the on being thank you in the flow, which was at the Pragovka Gallery here. It was a big body of work I've been working on for more than a year, and it just like not that long ago I was done with that, and we moved everything here. And I had a lot of like a custom mushroom orders going on. And now that I'm done with all of these, I'm feeling more, a little bit more stable and relaxed to just work on my body of work more. And experimenting here in the studio, just a funny story. Sometimes things are born like during the experimentation here. For example, I was mixing paints in these cups, and I had like a several chemicals mixed there with the paints, and obviously some things from the air, I guess, went into it. And this time there is some like kind of a bacteria with this fungus structure grew up in these cups.
Why do you have
It's very
microorganism colonies blooming in your...
I have no idea, but they look like very much, like this slime moldy stuff. Yeah, I decided to cut them out, and now I'm like experimenting with them, like just trying to put them into the painting and play around. So sometimes things are born like this, and sometimes it's proper microscopic research. Yeah, so it's a lot of stuff, and also I really want to do more here also in Europe, so I'm trying to, make more connections and maybe collaborate with someone or just, get together. So I'm trying to find all these people in Europe who are also crazy about mushrooms. Slowly but surely, like I meet amazing people here. This is something important, I think. And about any updates, like on the future exhibitions, sometimes I'm on local markets and stuff, like with my art, I always post on Instagram. And also, I'm teaching, so I'm doing this workshop. So with microscopes, we like dive into microscopic worlds, and then we do some art inspired by this. And I also talk about nature, science. I give people a little bit of background, how even the art and nature started to work together. Like I talk about Ernst Haeckel, his illustrations. It's a first scientist artist who like started these microscopic illustrations.
Fascinating.
Yeah, and it's really fascinating, and we learn about this, and we do some art. So I'm like also trying to develop this teaching part. So it's a lot of things going on, but I usually have like all info on my Instagram about that.
Well, that's all really exciting stuff, and I love that idea of like, man, every mushroom club could have an art thing. Like, let's go on a mushroom walk or let's do some microscopy. All right, now we're gonna draw it. What a great idea to like get your mind working and really like trying to understand, because you probably learn the
It
information
helps.
better when you have to make
Exactly.
art.
Ernst Haeckel said that it's the best way to learn about nature through drawing. Like for him, it was the main thing. He would like work one eye in the microscope and the other eye on the drawing. And at that time, in the 18th century, there was nothing, like no instruments, no nothing, very old microscope. And he would draw all these incredible organisms. So
Oh,
it's
that's
really
amazing.
inspiring.
That's amazing. All right. Everyone, we should add that to our practice now. Like, try to draw what you just saw out in the forest. Maybe it'll help you learn it better. And, hearing the story of you growing microorganisms in the concoction of chemicals and paint, that's insane. I want to know what that microorganism is. But it does remind me to ask what your preferred mediums are. And maybe like something about your preferred scale, or who knows, with you who is an artist based on challenging our notions of scale, maybe you work in every scale imaginable. But tell us about, the mediums and kind of the composition of your artwork. And I'm staring, people listening can't see this, I'm staring at beautiful big pieces behind you.
Hey, morals. I started, I think, from very small scales, actually, but then I got less scared, and I ended up doing 2 meter high
Huge.
paintings. And I want to do like bigger, because the bigger you do it, the more impressive it is, and the more immersive it is, and the people are even more, like interested and attracted to this. Like, what's going on there? It's so huge. Oh, but wait, it's microscopic. So back to the mediums, often I use acrylic because it's very forgiving material for me, because like you can build it and you can change it, and there is always a way to a little bit fix things. But I also work with oil. The huge paintings are made with oil, which is less forgiving but has, sometimes better colors or like different feelings when you draw different system. I work with professional markers as well for more like precise illustrations. I do work even sometimes with, like, I use mosses, for example. I insert them in my paintings. And then I also work digitally. I do animations out of my artworks. And coming back to like a ways to of, you know, spreading the word here, I'm doing these concerts where I perform, I sing, and I have this screen with the my animations of fungi. I'm sure it looks very weird to many people, but that's how I make them curious. And they're like, but wait, what is this going on here on the screen? So I'm like, you know, step by step, I'm trying to explain. So this is fungi and this is what they do, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, for me, the work doesn't stop with the painting. I try to, you know, continue with some animation or digital ways. I also do stuff in iPad and Procreate. And once I did, I was growing fungi and I was painting at the same time on the box from where they were growing. It was also really fun.
That's amazing. I feel like you bring together so many things, and even thinking about that large scale, like how perfect is that? That Irene is going to say, all right, let's take this microscopic world and let's make it way bigger than you are. And now how does that change things? How do you see scale now? But I love that you don't stop there and that you bring in like, yeah, let's do singing and animation of this world to draw you into it. I love that. And I don't think it's a uniquely, like necessarily a purely artistic trait, but I do find that artists are able to synthesize all that material and then put it in a format that kind of, bah, like gives it all to you at once and really challenges what you think and how you're like blows away your normal perception and you start thinking differently. So I think that can be such a powerful tool. And I am curious if you have like the works behind you, it might just be a theme in that work, but I feel like you have kind of a color scheme that flows throughout your works. I mean, it's super bright and colorful, but there's a certain quality to it. Mm-hmm. Is there anything like that? Do you have certain colors that you prefer, a certain type of, not this isn't like pastel, but any kind of color preference or scheme you stick with?
Yeah, I think I'm not very pastel person, definitely.
My artistic vocabulary is just very limited. I was struggling to find a word there.
Yeah, I think so for sure I'm not controlling this. The colors are just coming, and I guess they reflect my personality because I want to scream about fungi, and I think my colors are also, you know, a little bit screaming like, hey, we are here, look, we are purple and we are violet and we are pink and we are all colors in the world, you know. So I think it's more about even the character of these mushrooms that I want to show, how they are, you know, unpredictable and different, and there's such a variety, and the colors can be incredible.
Yeah. Well, and there's so many beautiful colors to draw from. Just looking at all the different mushrooms, you can get inspired by the colors, the rich colors in some mushrooms. And I'm sure at the microscopic level, color plays into that as well.
As well. Yeah. And then when you blend it all, it's all another story.
Yeah. Well, I do want to then talk a little bit about your music too. Obviously, you said you still, like, the music is very much a part of these performances, but I mean, I just haven't seen it. When you do music, is it all singing? Do you play instruments? What is your musical practice?
I play guitar and sing. It's not really connected to fungi, but I guess these formats of concerts where I combine them with my animation is my way to somehow, you know, combine it, because I know that with music, I also can attract more attention, and it is more... it's quicker, because with paintings, it might take a year to make a painting, and then with singing, it's quite quick. And yeah, I've been like performing all my life, so it's my like a second job. So it's acoustic, it's rock, pop, indie a little bit, Latin American. I sing in like 7 languages, I think, by now.
What?
I really enjoy learning new languages. Yeah, this is another thing that I do, which is not exactly related to fungi, but I guess it's another expression.
Well, you have right brain. Is it right brain? Is the artistic side, right? You have right
Mm.
brain activated. Definitely. If you're being a polymath and you're doing music and you're doing art, you just said it takes a year. So some of these paintings then take a long time. Do you normally have a bunch of them going at once, or how does that work?
Yeah, normally it's a mess.
It's controlled chaos.
Yeah, and then I like sometimes I just have to leave them and then come back. Like a lot of work is happening in my head as well. So I have to give them some time, and sometimes it just doesn't come, and I need to, take time and do something else and then come back to the other painting, and that's how I work. But it's really hard to organize, honestly. It's ongoing, many ongoing projects.
Well, when you have a brain that's constantly giving you images that you need to get out, like, hold on, okay, you got that one out. Here's the next one.
It's a tragedy and it's a blessing.
Exactly. It's a mixed blessing there for sure. Well, and where can people then get your art? I mean, we talked about some of the exhibitions, but for anyone, well, I guess we're not going to limit it, but for anyone, especially who's listening to this, who may not be there in Prague or in continental Europe, where is the best place to get your art? Or contact you if they want to make art. I have used your services to make many an amazing design. So where can people kind of connect with getting your art or reaching out to you to make something together?
So the first way is Etsy. Like I have Etsy shop, which has prints, stickers, originals, but also even mushroom swimsuit. So if you ever
Mushroom
wanted,
swimsuits.
yeah, there is a lot of crazy stuff. So if you ever wanted a mushroom swimsuit or slime mold swimsuit, you can check it out.
For
And
sure.
it's
Listeners of this podcast for sure want that.
And it's www.irineantonis.art. This is for Etsy. And then you can always just send me a DM on Instagram or Facebook. Everywhere I am Irene Antonis Art. And on Instagram I am Irene underline Antonis underline Art. That's how you can connect with me and I will be happy.
Yes, you do have the gift. I call it the gift of Stoke. You get excited. My wife and I, when we reached out to you, we were like, yes, I want to work with someone who's like even more excited than we are about the mushrooms. So you definitely give that off. And I know we talked a little bit about some of the projects and some of the future work. What are any future projects you have planned? And I know behind you, I think that's part of the On Being in the Flow project. Is that still ongoing, or what are some future projects or plans that you're working on?
Well, that concrete project is done for now. I'm also continuing to collect mushroom stories because it
Yes.
is really something, exciting, and I would love to collect more in the future. So anyone who is hearing me right now, I will be really grateful if you share your story, whatever story it is. Like I received stories about mushroom healing the cancer or mushroom, changing people's lives like from upside down, and it's really something exciting to work with. And then like I just have a lot of sketches that I need to bring to the canvas, so it all will take time. So I'm planning to work on that, as I said, like more on my own body of work, and preferably with big scales. And I am trying to also do works focused on a certain kind of fungi. For example, I do Basidiomycota, Ascomycota, Zygomycota. So I'm trying to also do stuff in this way, like kind of classify things also for people to get some educational, how to say, anyway, like learn from something from there. And so that
Yeah.
it is not so complicated and it's not so mixed. And I already have like some of these ready, and some are in making, and then I have just a lot of composition I would like to do. I did like a rare fungi as well, painting like focused only on fungi that are very, under the threat of extinction, and different topics to bring attention to this little organisms. And yeah, hopefully to get more possibilities to work at the residencies, and because this gives me possibility to work with better microscopic equipment. So again, if there is anyone who wants to collaborate on that, I'm really interested. So
well, certainly plenty of projects laying out before you there. But yeah, I like that idea of organizing and making your compositions kind of structured around a theme, because yeah, I think that can be highly educational. An artist we've had on before, Saga Maria from Sweden, has some charts like
her.
That. Yeah, where she's done some beautiful art of a certain kind. And you know, we have them hung in our house. And I feel like people who come to our house learn more from that than me going blah, 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 and talking at them really fast, freaking out about mushrooms. But they actually like learn something from the drawing with some labels on it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great idea. And how great would that be to put some of the stories you're getting with some of your art in like an illustration book? Or that would be really cool, to kind of a illustrated modern ethnomycology.
One of my
dreams. Really
exactly.
Cool. Really cool. I love all of it. And of course, we'll have links to everywhere where you can find Irene's work. You can reach out to her in the show notes. And I definitely encourage you to follow her pages, because it adds a burst of color and just amazing design into your life every time you go on there.
Joy.
Yes, we all need a shot of colorful mushroom joy, for sure. Well, I'll round things out then with a couple questions I like to ask all my guests. No, before I get there, before I wrap things up, I do have to know how, if you still have time to forage, first of all, in and around Prague, and what the wild mushroom foraging scene is like there.
Oh yeah, that's so exciting to talk about. I because in this autumn I've done so many mushroom hunting trips, and I finally got, you know, more comfortable here, because first years were like, I'm not sure. And I also, you know, I listen a lot of stuff like mycologists. Also, I have one of my favorite mycologists. He's Russian. I don't know, maybe you've heard about him. His name is Mikhail Vishnevsky. He's very popular in Russia. And he's giving like all these lectures about ethnomycology as well. Very interesting. And he mentions that most of the poisonous cases are happening when one person is moving to another country and thinking that all mushrooms are the same. And then it happens that we just are so sure that they are the same, but they are not actually. So this was a little bit of a scary part for me, because I'm finding here the mushrooms and they do look similar, but I also find a lot of mushrooms that are a little bit different, and I'm like not completely sure. Like, I also found here a lot of varieties of boletuses, and they are all like very similar, but they also different. Like, some of them have more like yellow stem, and you know, all these little things that you better check.
That's right.
But I did like a lot of mushroom hunting this year, and all our freezer is completely full. And I also did Amanita muscaria tincture. I did Amanita muscaria dried. I'm going to microdose. I'm excited to try it.
Wow.
So a lot of plans with that. And I'm also like discovering different locations here. And the nature here is absolutely amazing. You can take a bus, and in 1 hour you will be in the forest, and things are exciting there. First time in my life, I cooked amethyst deceiver mushrooms and some other mushrooms that, you know, violet ones.
Yeah, they look like... how are those? I've heard different things, but I've never eaten them. How are those?
They are good. Like, I like to add them as a mix to other mushrooms, because they don't have like distinctive taste, but they are okay, like nice. I remember first time I brought them, because they are all violet, and my husband was like, well, you eat this. I will look at you. And he was like,
you tested out.
Not trusting me at all. And then he saw that everything was fine. Of course, I checked it a million times, and I'm not that crazy, but yeah, it's really fun. Like, I'm discovering every year, I'm discovering new mushrooms here. It's really amazing.
That makes me so happy to hear that you're able to still continue, and now you're finding your spots and you're starting to experiment more. And it sounds like you are going down the Amanita muscaria rabbit hole. potentially to try that out. It's so funny. It's just rising right now from being this mushroom that was, as with most things, if you tell someone this is off limits, this is so bad and evil, people always say, I want to know more. Tell me more about that. So I think there's definitely a wave of that happening right now. So that's exciting. I'm curious how that'll show up in your artwork, like crazy Amanita, like compositions in the future.
You never know. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's beautiful. I guess then to wrap things up, I will now get to my final questions. I'll now get to the questions that I like to ask my guests. And the first question I like to wrap up with is just a mushroom you love and why. And with someone who's been into the microscopic, someone who's foraged in different areas, different countries, different continents, you know, what is just a mushroom you love and why?
Okay, so this is one of the hardest questions I've ever answered to because it's just incredibly hard to choose. Okay, so from artistic point of view, I really love Ascomycota fungi because they are always surprising with the forms and the colors. And like it's hard to find the proper mushroom looking things there. They're more like all, you know, everything you can and cannot imagine is there. I have these two huge encyclopedias of fungi, which I use like a references for my artwork and for the research. And first, there are two encyclopedias, and one is Basidiomycota and the other one is Ascomycota. So when you open this Ascomycota, you're like, I cannot believe that this exists. No, really. And so many varieties. So definitely these fungi are a big inspiration for me as an artist. Then I really love Rhodotus palmatus. I don't know. It's just so amazing. It's, you know, this pink, beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, it's just stunning. And I love Hidnellum pecki. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not giving just one. It's impossible. And then from more like mysteriously philosophical point of view, I'm really fascinated with Amanita muscaria, of course, because it's just also because of this contradiction in my head that all my life I was told that this is something we cannot touch and something very dangerous. And now I am like taking the tincture and using it against the pain. It's just there are so many discoveries about this mushroom, which is fascinating.
Well, it's funny because so much of the information that folks in the US originally got back in the 80s and 90s was from trips like Gary Linkoff going to the Kamchatka Peninsula. And there are all these stories from like, oh, there are all these Russian traditions. But in your experience, no one in Russia was talking about how great it was.
No, like, I guess maybe in Siberia, in this, you know, shamanic communities,
right.
But, and also like some people do it, but it's very underground or like, it's not really something that people talk about. In some villages they do it, but it's not so, now it's also growing slowly, especially among young people, like it's growing, but it's still very much a strange thing to talk about.
Right. But it'll be interesting to see how that changes. Well, thank you. You gave us all kinds of good answers and mushrooms to look at and learn to love as well. And then more broadly, you know, what has this relationship, which sounds pretty all-encompassing, but what is this relationship that you've developed with fungal organisms given to you? And this can be, you know, lessons that they've taught you, spiritual understandings. And yeah, we've touched on it throughout, but just what has this relationship given to you?
I think most of all, like, they helped me to survive the hardest times, this love for mushrooms, especially like the times when I'm alone, when I feel, you know, just destroyed. Mushrooms, they bring back this feeling of surprise, the feeling of curiosity for life, this unexpectedness, like they keep you in a good tension, like you don't know what to expect. They can, you know, appear wherever, whenever, and their ways are so various and unpredictable. The more I read about them, like I fell in love with so many books and they open a new world for me. And like in the COVID time, it really helped me to stay sane and alive. And like every morning I would wake up with the thought, okay, today I'm going to read more about this, you know, this beautiful world of mushrooms. I'm going to open something else for myself. So this, you know, feeling of curiosity. And I think the second important thing for me is mushrooms give me like connection to my family, because now it's not an easy time. I cannot travel really to Russia because of political reasons.
Right.
Of course, it's sad, and the mushrooms is something that brings me back to, you know, this feeling close to them, to my childhood, and they really keep this feeling of family, that I'm continuing this family obsession. Because something I didn't mention, that when I was working on one of my last projects on being in the flow, I had a visit back home a year ago or so, and I went to the family library, and I found these old books, old illustrations of my grandfather who was drawing mushrooms, like amateur mushrooms.
Wow.
Drawings, and it made me so excited, and it just brought back this mystery of how is this possible, you know, that coming back through all these generations, then my grandfather, the father of my mother, was so much into mushrooms, like he was participating in various mushroom competitions and winning like first prizes for picking up the best, the most mushrooms. And we even have photographs of him, you know, all these things. And he had so many mushroom ID books, you know, like the library is full of them. I brought back some of them. And it just amazes me how we have this in blood. So I feel this
Yes.
connection in DNA. So mushrooms for me is more than just mushrooms. It's also like a family thing.
You have fungi embedded in your DNA. That's fascinating. That's fascinating. Yeah, just in the past couple of years, I found out that our family, or at least my father's side, was from Latvia originally. And apparently our family there really loved hunting mushrooms. I was
oh,
like, okay, maybe that's
so nice.
My DNA. That's well, that's amazing. And I was going to, well, first of all, I was going to ask you, but I didn't really want to bring up the conflict going on there, because I know that for you, this is something deeply personal. But it's interesting because you think with an event like that, it would put everything in perspective, and suddenly like, hey, do mushrooms matter? Does art matter? I'm like, yeah, it sounds like it almost matters more when things like that are going on.
Like at first it seemed, I felt guilty even for doing this at these times, but then like I rewatched this part of my life, and I think it's on the contrary actually an important thing, because it will not only keep me alive and, you know, and sane in these difficult times, but also, you know, I'm doing something, maybe not that much, but something that maybe will bring more peace and joy, because this is overall is a positive thing that I'm doing, you know. So like at this time the world needs as much joy and as much peace as possible, even though it's hard. So yes, as you said, it's not trivial, like it's on the contrary is important. Even though like we might think at first sight, because art is something like superficial or something that you do when you have more time, or you know, first things first, but actually not. Art was always there, and art was always saving people in hard times. Music, art.
Absolutely. And, you know, part of the reason I don't talk about it is, you know, we have such a, in our country, I feel like we know so very little about it, but we always want to comment about it. That's kind of an American thing. We know nothing, but we want to make sure everyone hears us. But yeah, I do appreciate you kind of lending that perspective. Well, then the final question is just, I'm a big bookworm. I love books, but yeah, tell us about any books that are influencing you right now, or any other media if you're not a big book reader.
Oh yeah, I love like mushroom and science art-ish books. I love them. So there are so many, like, and I'm coming back to them. It's hard. But one of really good ones is, like, it's for everyone really. It's not even about mushrooms exactly, but it's this book, The Invention of Nature. Probably you've heard about it. It's very popular here. It's about this scientist Humboldt who brought for the first time for the humanity the vision of nature as a whole, It was in the end of 18th, the beginning of 19th century, if I'm not mistaken, because at that time the science was very much systematic and like everything should be systematized, like you cannot really say that things are connected. So he was actually the first scientist traveler who traveled to Latin America and different continents, and he like started noticing how different plants and different things are repeating themselves and different variations and many other connections he found. And he like first started saying that actually nature is a living whole. It's a net of life. There is nothing that is separate. There is everything. Everything is connected. As cliche as it sounds, it was not like this 2 centuries ago. People had no idea about that. For us now, it sounds quite normal, and we say, yeah, it's cliche, but apparently it was not like this, and just 2 centuries back. It's also something I talk about on my workshops, because I think it's really important to talk about these things. And this guy, Humboldt, he influenced a lot of artists, environmental activists, like so many people, like, and so many places in the world actually are known by his name, apparently.
Humboldt, California.
So yeah, and he influenced Ernst Haeckel, who I mentioned, this artist, microscopic artist. And he was first scientist who said that, you know, art and science can actually exist together. And you can even understand science properly through art. Like, it's the way to understand nature, is to look at it and to draw it, to try to, you know, do it with your hands. And there's so many interesting things in this book. And then another one is obviously Marilyn Sheldrake. I love this book for, you know, just because he looked at mushrooms from so many sides and in such a perfect format that, you know, there is nothing to add or to take off, you know. It's just perfectly done in a way that it will impress any person who doesn't know or knows already about fungi. And, you know, I love reading about lichens from there and about the intelligence of fungi. It's just, I have it here. Unfortunately, people don't see it, but it's full of notes.
Yeah, like, it looks like you might have read that a couple times. There's more post-it notes than pages in there.
I'm coming back to it all the time. And yeah, like Fantastic Fungi, Michael Pollan, all these also were big influences. And I love Radical Mycology. I haven't read it fully. It's just huge.
I don't know anyone who's read it cover to cover yet.
But I think it's perfect, like a study book for anyone who is somehow connected to fungi, you know, because you, whatever you have question about, you will find there.
It's in there, it's including crazy stuff. I remember flipping through it again, and there was stuff in there about like biodiesel from fungi. I'm like, wait, what? What are we talking about here?
Meditation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. Well, some great books. And the first book, again, was The Invention of Nature.
Invention of Nature, yeah. By Andrea Wolf.
That's amazing. Yeah, Humboldt is such a seminal figure. I remember reading about natural history in the country of Colombia and how he influenced so many naturalists there and across South. I mean,
yes.
Yeah, we have a lot of debt to Humboldt for kind of how we think today and how we understand nature. So that's a beautiful, I'm going to get that book.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like,
and this is why I need to ask this question, is because this gives me so many amazing books to read and new worlds to open up. Well, Irene, thank you so much for coming on the Mushroom Hour with someone who clearly has like a million things to do. Thank you for making the time, being very present, and giving such great kind of expansive and thought-provoking answers. You've been a fantastic guest, and I was already such a fan of your art. It was so great to get to speak with you in person. So thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Oh my, thank you so much. It was so exciting to talk. I'm so happy. Thank you for this conversation.